This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. This is New Beginnings. I am Freddie Bell. Glad you're with us today. And coming up on the show, many of our favorite partners, including Label Sternbach and friends from AARP Minnesota. All this plus the words to the wise on New Beginnings. And our program is underway right now. Joining us today on New Beginnings is Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's a Regents Professor and Epidemiologist. He's Vice President of the United States on all things related to the pandemic and COVID-19. He joins us today, and Doctor, I'm understanding there's yet another variant of COVID-19. What is it, and how concerned should we be?
Once again, we find ourselves looking at an emergent variant in its infancy, trying to figure out what it will be when it grows up. As you've heard me say many times, I always consider new variants innocent until proven guilty. This particular one, BA.2.87.1, has been gaining attention in the last week after South African authorities announced they identified this new Omicron lineage from 9 samples across 3 provinces. It was first detected in September of 2023, with those samples collected at various points until December. According to the initial analysis, BA.2.87.1 is a highly divergent viral lineage with a multitude of mutations and deletions concentrated in influential coding regions of the spike protein. It's important to note that this is genetically distinct from the JN1 variant that we've been talking about so often and other minor circulating variants. Early reports seem to point to this variant emerging from a single host who was chronically infected with early BA.2 infection, meaning that the individual was infected for around 18 months. This, of course, could occur in someone who's immune compromised. If this is true, the virus persisted and evolved within the host before transmitting to a susceptible person. The European CDC declared this newcomer as a variant under monitoring, while its closely related parent lineage, BA.2, has been characterized as de-escalated since March 2023. An important deciding factor in predicting whether or not the situation will intensify is if it picks up even more mutations that give it growth advantage. We can look back on what happened with the parent BA.2.86 variant. It never took off the way some predicted until it picked up enough opportune mutations to create JN1. There is relatively limited information on BA.2.87.1 as of now, but rest assured we will continue to cover this variant as the situation emerges. As far as JN1, it's reached what I consider complete dominance in the United States and beyond, accounting for more than 90% of new cases. The silver lining here, though, is that the infections are beginning to drop as more and more people are removed from that susceptible population by either being infected or recently getting vaccinated with the updated shot. I hope these trends continue to bode well for spring, but ultimately we'll have to wait and see. Again, let me remind you, I look at the future of COVID by the level of human immunity, meaning how long has it been since you were last vaccinated or you had had previous infection. In the instances of those two events, you may have 6 months of relatively good protection against serious illness, hospitalizations, and deaths, but it will surely wane over time. And then if that collides with a new variant that emerges, we could see an uptick in cases again. Now, we have seen trends suggesting more serious illness in younger populations with these new variants, but this is what we will have to continue to monitor closely, and we will keep you informed about that.
That's some great information, Doctor, and we have to leave it right there. I'm Freddie Bell, and if you'd like more information or if you missed any parts of our conversation, you can go to freddiebell.com and listen to the entire interview with Dr. Michael Osterholm and I. New Beginnings continues right now. It's time now to talk about your health, and I'm wondering if you wake up regularly with stiff muscles, creaky joints, or the general feeling that your body simply isn't as limber as it once was when you went to bed. The first thing to know is that you're not alone. Waking up with a tight body is almost a universal human experience that, according to a physical therapist and assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology at the University of Connecticut, Mary Claire Capetta says that it's quite common for it to happen every day. But while feeling stiff in the morning is normal and typically dissipates quickly, it's also uncomfortable while it lasts. Mary Claire says the good news that there are a few tricks that we can use when you feel stiff and even before the feeling arises to help you get off to a faster start and relief even faster. Most of the time, that tight feeling when you wake up is a result of overnight changes to the lubrication in two different features of the body, the joints and the fascia. The fascia is a complex group of connective tissues that surround and support the muscles, soft tissue, organs, and bones. Think of the fascia as a fibrous web that wraps around and through muscle tissue to give it structure and stability. It forms multiple layers with a gel-like lubricant in between that allows the layers to slide and glide smoothly, which helps you to feel loose and limber. That, according to Dr. Antonio Stecco, a fascial researcher and professor of rehabilitation medicine at New York University. In certain situations, like when your body temperature drops, when you've been still for an extended period of time, or when lactic acid builds up in the muscles and fascia during intense exercise, the lubricant becomes thicker and the layers of fascia can't glide as easily, leading to feelings of stiffness. When we sleep, many of those thickening situations occur. You're usually still for a long time, say 8 hours, and your body temperature tends to drop. Your joints may also continue to feel stiff in the morning. In healthy joints, a thick fluid lubricates the space between the ends of our bones, which are capped with cartilage, to help them to move freely and comfortably. Whenever we're still for a long period, like when we're sleeping, the cartilage sucks up the lubricant like a sponge, Capetta says, making our joints feel creaky. How can we feel better? The good news is that the remedy for stiffness in the morning, whether it's caused by your fascia or your joints, is the same. Movement. While we're still in bed and lying on our backs, start by doing a full body stretch like a cat or a dog does when they first wake up by extending your legs and arms wide in opposite directions. Then try pointing and flexing your toes or stretching just your arms and torso, mimicking the cliche just woke up stretch. To bring fluid back into your joints, try gently bending and unbending your knees and elbows, rolling your wrist and your ankles, or gently nodding your head from side to side. If you still feel stiff once you've gotten out of bed, try marching in place, continuing to bend and rebend any joints that feel stiff, Capetta says. If your back and the sides of your body feel tight, you could try a gentle stretch like a loose forward hang toward your toes with slightly bent knees or side bends in cat-cow yoga poses. Studies suggest that a regular yoga practice can be effective in reducing discomfort associated with joint and muscle stiffness and chronic back pain. Do whatever feels good for you. If you have a dog, taking it out first thing in the morning might get your body juices flowing and help you feel more nimble more quickly. If it's a cold morning, try a hot shower. While it's healthy and normal to feel a little tight after a night of stillness, you might feel even more tight if your baseline flexibility is already limited. You can lessen this by staying limber and maintaining an active lifestyle in general. If you don't already stretch regularly, adding even 15 minutes of stretching to any day part can help you to feel less stiff when you wake up. If you sit in front of the computer for work, try moving around and changing positions throughout the day. And you're listening to New Beginnings. It's the weekend and New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and it happened this week. In 1971, department store chain founder James Cash Penney died at the age of 95. He founded the JCPenney stores. In 1973, the state of Ohio became the first state to post metric distance signs. In 1973, the first group of U.S. prisoners of war were released from North Vietnam. In 1983, jazz pianist Hubie Blakes died at the age of 100. In 1985, actor, director, Nicholas Colestano died at the age of 61. He is best remembered for his role as Ernie Coach Fatuso on the hit sitcom Cheers. In 1999, the Senate acquitted President Bill Clinton of perjury and obstruction of justice, ending a 13-month drama that began with the president's affair with White House intern Monica Lewinsky and led to only the second presidential impeachment trial in history. In the year 2000, penis cartoonist Charles Schulz died at the age of 77. In 2002, Pakistani officials charged three men in connection with the kidnapping of Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl. In 2007, 20 years after they went their separate ways, members of the police announced plans to launch a North American tour. Formed in 1977, the group consisted of Sting, Stuart Copeland, and Andy Summers. In 2013, legendary television comedian Sid Caesar passed away at the age of 91. Caesar was best known for his 1950s sketch comedy series, Your Show of Shows. In 2017, Adele went 5 for 5, walking away from the Grammy Awards with a win in each category for which she was nominated. In 2019, El Chapo was found guilty of all 10 federal crimes against him in New York. And in 2019, the United States Treasury announced that the United States national debt topped $22 trillion for the first time. It happened this week, and I'm Freddie Bell.
The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, Minnesota Family Investment Program, MFIP, and WIC Nutrition, along with other available programs, can help you buy food while budgets are tight. SNAP, MFIP, and WIC benefits can help families access additional support as well, including health screenings, emergency assistance, nutrition education, and employment training. Apply online at applymn.dhs.mn.gov. This message is powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
We're back again and continuing our discussion on Roth conversions. This week, we are going to talk about how much you should convert to Roth this year should you max out your current tax bracket, or the next, or go all out and cover it all. And what about Irma? Now let's turn our attention to your financial health in retirement. And with us is Label Sternbach. He is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. So Label, last week we talked about how to know if a Roth conversion makes sense. Now let's talk about how much we should convert. I'm wondering, Label, is there some kind of magical formula you use? I know it's not magical, but it seems like it at times. I've heard a lot of people talk about different strategies. What's your first, what's your second, what's your third strategy?
So when it comes to figuring out how much to convert, right, the fundamental question is really what's going to have the biggest impact on our financial security, right? And it's what's going to have the impact on our financial security in the next, 10 years. And then the years I really like to look at is between age 80 and age 90. And the reason for that is because during those years, between age 80 and age 100. And the reason for that is that's where your required minimum distributions start to skyrocket, right? Almost everyone I see can make it through to age 80, no problem. Age 85, things start to deteriorate, and that's where that compounding impact of these decisions of, you max out the Roth conversion, you were fine until age 85, right? But then all of a sudden, things start to go haywire because the compounding differences, right, the 15, 20 years of compounding growth or loss of growth starts to really catch up to you. So the questions that I always ask, right? So number one, right, if we're in something like the 12% tax bracket, then I always recommend, almost always recommend maxing out that for conversions. Because the way I look at it is, well, 12%, we know taxes are going to go up. I doubt the 12% tax bracket is going to stay long term, right? The lowest tax bracket has been higher in the past, is almost certainly going to be higher in the future. So I think that's a worthwhile bet to make, right? Now, going beyond the 12% tax bracket, that starts to become dicey because now we're talking about 22%, right? So if I'm giving you, you know, 20, if I'm taking a 22% loss on all my money up front, that's a big hurdle for me to overcome, right? I need to have like almost a 50% return in order to get back to even. That takes a long time, right? That's a lot of money. And I'm doing all of that for the potential to save money on taxes down the road, which, you know, if I know for sure that based on how the tax system is set up right now, and, you know, where my income is going to be adjusted for inflation in the future, that I'm probably going to be in the 22% tax bracket, then, you know, that's a reasonable assumption to make that, you know, depending on my outlook, right, maybe I'll max out the 22. And then if you're doing 22, you might as well do 24% and look at that, because 2% more, right, that's nothing when you know, in the grand scheme of things. But the real question becomes, right, is how does that impact my financial security long term? How does that impact my lifestyle long term, right? We need to know the answers to those questions, because just because we're saving money on taxes now, just because it means that in the future we can pull the money out tax free, does not mean that we're going to have more money at the end of the day. Right? It doesn't mean that we're going to have more money to fund our lifestyle. And if we have expenses up front, right, that can be catastrophic for us, right? I don't want you, you know, let's say you have $1 million. I don't want you giving $200,000 to the IRS on the hopeful bet that at some point in the future, you're going to save more than that in taxes.
That's an interesting perspective there. We're talking with Lable Sternbach. He's Amazon's best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety. So you mentioned maxing out your current tax bracket. What are the pros and cons of maxing it out? And why would you want to go to the next tax bracket? I know earlier you said, what's another 2%? How would you answer that?
Yeah. So the reason for maxing out your current tax bracket, right, is, well, you're already in this tax bracket right now. And chances are, right, if you're in it right now, unless you're still earning money, unless you're still working and you're getting a paycheck, chances are you're probably going to stay in that relative zone of income throughout your retirement. So if we think taxes are going to go up in the future, which, I mean, almost everybody thinks taxes have to go up in the future, then why would we assume we would be in a lower tax bracket down the road, right? So that's the argument, right? And it's not necessarily a dollar and cents argument, right? Because if you map it out and you do the math, you may be like, oh, well, I'm paying more in taxes to convert the current tax bracket. But we know, you know, rationally, logically, we know the taxes are probably going to increase, right? There's a high probability of that happening. And by the way, I don't know if you've been following what's been happening with the treasuries, but we're starting to see some of those signs of stress that I've talked about on the podcast before that would be the precursor to taxes having to increase. And one of those precursors, one of those things is that the federal government cannot refinance their debt at affordable interest rates. And right now, the treasury, the auctions on treasuries, which is how the federal government refinances their debt, has been the lowest it's been in a very long time, because people don't have the same appetite to buy their debt, especially at these interest rates, when they can get better elsewhere. Or the big buyers like China just don't want money leaving their country, and so they're not rebuying, right? They're letting their treasuries mature and they're not replacing them. So when that happens, the federal government, when they can't get money from outside, they're going to have to get it internally, right? So at some point, taxes have to go up. I think that that's a given. The mm-hmm. question is what are you going to experience? And based on your lifestyle, right, you're the only one who knows what your lifestyle is and whether you're going to be spending more or less in retirement. But I think it's a fair assumption that your taxes probably are going to remain pretty consistent. And the way I kind of look at it is, your taxes that you're paying right now, how are you relative to somebody who is working, right? Is the amount of income that you're taking out in retirement similar to a middle-class person who is working, a middle-class white-collar worker? Because if you're similar to a middle-class white-collar worker, right, meaning that you're living on somewhere like $100,000 to, you know, $200,000 a year, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. So somewhere between $75,000 and $150,000, let's say, right? If you're living in that range, you're going to be the target for Congress, right? Because they're not going to care whether you're retired or not. What they're going to really be going after is the bulk of the working population. And they're going to be targeting taxes toward those people, and you're going to get swept up in that. Conversely, if you're at the bottom end of the tier, right, and your taxable income is, you know, at the federal poverty line because you're taking it out of Roths, because you're taking it out of, you know, qualified dividends or, you know, qualified interest or capital gains, right, and you're not, your taxable income on your tax return is, you know, below $50,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
Well, then you're probably going to get all the subsidies, right? We talk about being a welfare state. It goes to the bottom tier workers, right? The people who are making the least amount of money. And that's where I want you to be in retirement. I want your tax return to look no different than the person who is managing a McDonald's, right? And is struggling to make ends meet because they're the ones who get all the federal subsidies. They're the ones who the tax code is a wealth transfer system and not a way of paying taxes. And so you really need to kind of, you know, do that math and say to yourselves, where am I going to be? And how do I position myself, you know, so that I'm in that lower tax bracket? And so when you talk about converting, right, I want you to keep a few things in mind, right? We want to be in the lower tax bracket. So when we're in the lower tax bracket, take full advantage of it. When we're in the higher tax bracket, what's the difference between 22 and 24%? Realistically speaking, if we're willing to give up one-fifth of our money to save taxes down the road, then we should be willing to give up, you know, 2% more, right? Go from one-fifth to one-quarter. The math does not change between, you know, 20% and 24% or 22% and 24%. If it was the right decision at 22%, it's the right decision at 24%. And then finally, right, when you look at all that, you then need to say, will I save enough money over time and will it impact my financial security in such a way that I'm comfortable with, right? Given the all the unknowns that I have. And the only way to answer that question is to map it out and see what those numbers look like, because I guarantee you, you're going to fall somewhere in the middle.
Label's helping us to make some decisions with our Roth conversions. And I know you've talked about it often on this show, Label, about how the biggest threat to retirement is drawdown or the decrease in value of your portfolio. Can you share with us right now about how that relates to the Roth conversion question? And I guess more importantly, how we should be thinking about the hit we might take when doing a Roth conversion?
Yeah, so we really, you know, when I think about the financial decisions that we make in retirement, the context I look at it from is by asking these five questions, right? These are what I see as being the five major risks. Risk number one is drawdown, anything that decreases our portfolio value, right? Because at the end of the day, right, you know, the government says they're going to give us money for Social Security, but we know that behind the scenes, they're pulling the rug out from under us. They're doing everything they can to make that check as small as possible, right? And we know that they're going to run into funding problems as the retiree population outnumbers the working population, right? It just, that's how it is. It's a legalized Ponzi scheme. So we know that that's a problem that's coming down the road, which means that we need to make sure we have as much resources as possible to support ourselves. The other thing we need to keep in mind is that medical science and, you know, the cost of care and the cost of, you know, living a life of comfort, right? We don't want to be living on the streets. We don't want to be living as a ward of the state. We want to make sure that we're living with dignity and comfort and to our standards. And so that means having resources to be able to pay for life, right? And so when we look at our resources, they are finite and we need to protect them. And the biggest expense that we're going to have in retirement is probably going to be taxes. So we want to make sure to protect against that. But by the same token, it's anything that decreases our portfolio value. So it doesn't matter if it's marked losses, doesn't matter if taxes, doesn't matter if it's paying retail, doesn't matter if it's a sudden and unexpected expense, right? A tree falls on our car, we need to get a new car. We need to make sure that when we're paying for that expense, we're doing it in a way that doesn't upset our long-term financial security, right? And so it may be worth paying, you know, getting a loan and paying interest so that we have that money for the compounding growth over, you know, 30 years, whereas a car loan, you know, gets paid off in 3 or 4 years, right? And so those are, you know, we need to stop playing checkers and start doing, you know, calculus, playing, you know, three-dimensional chess, because that's really what retirement is. And if we're not willing to do it, The government has an army of statisticians who are doing it. Their entire job is to figure out how to take money from one person's pocket, give it to the federal government, and then slowly dole it out so that, in theory, our country becomes a better place.
So as an advisor, how do you walk that narrow path between the people on the left and the people on the right? So for the average investor, how do you help them to navigate how much they should convert with Roth?
So the only question that I really think matters, right, is at the end of the day, how will it impact your lifestyle, right? And lifestyle is a subjective thing, right? There's a subjective component and objective. So the subjective is I feel safe. I feel secure, right? I feel like, the fact that I want to make sure that the vast majority of my money isn't taxable in the future, right? I'm worried about taxes in the future. If that's what keeps you up at night, then by all means, we need to protect against it. On the same token, I want to make sure that, we're not protecting ourselves from the demons under the bed but sacrificing, having a roof over our table and letting very real monsters into our home, right? So we want to make sure that we're balancing, the potential disasters from the actual disasters. And my goal as a financial advisor is to understand what are the things that are important to you and then making sure that we have a financial plan that is sound and protects against the things that we know for certain are going to happen, or we have a high probability are going to happen. And what we look at, right, and right now tax time, this is what I'm doing with all of our clients, is we go through and we reevaluate all those decisions and we say, based on where we are today, based on our assumptions, what do we want to do, right? And there's no right or wrong answer. But there is, does this make us more financially secure or less financially secure? And if it's something that's neutral, then it's something that, that's a decision that's, we then look at the subjective side, right, and say, well, it makes us sleep better at night, then let's do it. If it doesn't, right, if all of a sudden it's teetering to the other side and it's making us not sleep at night because we might run out of money, right, or it's making me as your advisor feel like we might run out of money, that is a conversation that we have, because the last thing that we want is, to sacrifice one security for another.
Makes a lot of sense. And unfortunately, Label, we have to leave it right there. You've given us a lot to think about, and that's all the time we have left for today, but you can join us next week as we talk about Irma and how it impacts your Roth conversion strategy. And a reminder, you can visit yieldsforyou.com, classes and information, yields, the number 4, the letter U.com. Yes, this is New Beginnings, and here are today's words to the wise. Education is the great equalizer. Education levels the playing field in offering a pathway to empowerment for individuals from all walks of life. It transcends barriers, opening doors, opportunities, knowledge, and personal growth. In the absence of privilege, education becomes the bridge to a society where everyone has the chance to thrive and contribute meaningfully. As a great equalizer, education ignites a flame of possibility, inspiring individuals to reach new heights and fostering a community where merit, determination, and intellect prevail. Today's words to the wise, education is the great equalizer. Thank you for listening to New Beginnings. You can stay up to date with this show. All you have to do is go to Google or to Apple and download the Freddie Bell Radio Shows app. Yes, download the Freddie Bell Radio Shows app and you'll be up to date on everything concerning this show and anything related to Freddie Bell. More to come. Stay with us.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hi again, and welcome to New Beginnings. And joining us right now as we begin our program is Kathy McClear, AARP's Minnesota State Director. And it's so good to be with you over this internet connection today. And oddly enough, that's what we're talking about. Hello, Kathy, and welcome back.
Hi, Freddie. Thanks for having me.
How vigilant do we need to be against people who would do us harm over the internet and across different types of airwaves?
You have to be so vigilant. We know that online scams and cybercrime is just, it's on the rise. And it's so critical to safeguard your passwords and keep your personal information private when you're online. And that's why we're hosting a free class. It's called Fraud, Vigilance Against Cyber Crimes. It will be March 6th from 10:30 to 11 a.m. And that is being held at the Minneapolis Park and Recreation at 2117 West River Road North in Minneapolis. And we're going to talk about a host of issues to help you protect your identity online.
What are some of the high-level tips that do you think might be shared at this particular meeting that's happening in March?
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of those basic precautions that you can take to really protect yourself from cyber criminals. So things like keeping your online identity protected, ways to bank safely online. I don't know about you, but I do almost all of my banking online these days. Mm-hmm. And it's important to understand how to do that safely. So many people are on social media, and I don't think a day goes by that one of my connections doesn't put out a message. Hey, don't respond to messages for me. I've been hacked. So we'll provide some tips on how to avoid losing control of your social media accounts and what to do if that happens to you. And then some of those red flags to recognize an online scam so that you can protect yourself and your hard-earned money.
So this is a really important topic, fraud, vigilance against cybercrime. Again, it's happening March 6th from 10:30 to 11:30 at the Minneapolis Park and Recreation. That's 2117 West River Road North in Minneapolis. It is so important. I know I just saw a report not long ago that talked about countries around the world who are getting it into your homes and into your businesses, siphoning off important information that could separate you from your money and your assets. What does the AARP Fraud Watch Network say about this, and how can they help individuals like us?
Yeah, well, we know that this is so problematic that that's why AARP started the Fraud Watch Network, to really help consumers stay up to date with reliable information and insights so that we can talk about those latest scams that are happening. I know Jay Hoppola from our team here at AARP Minnesota, I think you affectionately refer to him as the scam man. And yes. He's the guy who, you know, is really in tune with all those things that are happening and provides those timely updates for you on a regular basis. But if folks miss that, they can always get that information from directly from us. You can sign up to be part of the AARP Fraud Watch Network. It's a free resource for all. You do not have to be 50. You do not have to be a member of AARP. And the Fraud Watch Network will really give you those really important tips on how to proactively spot those scams and get guidance if you may have been targeted or if you think that you may be a victim of fraud.
It's really interesting. I know that you do a lot of work at the legislative level. Does AARP have plans in the session that is just underway to talk about how to protect citizens and your members in particular from fraud instances that could occur like this?
Yeah, so we know that once you've been victimized, chances of getting your money back are very, very slim. And so this session, we will be working to establish a fraud restitution fund for folks who may have unfortunately been a victim of frauds and scams and lost money. And so we can talk more about that when the session starts.
All right. And this is happening again, March 6th.
Yeah, March 6th, 10:30 to 11 a.m. at the Minneapolis Park and Recreation. You can find out more at aarp.org/MN events.
This is New Beginnings, and we're learning about fraud. Make sure you avail yourself to this particular event. It's really going to help you to save time and money. And now it's time for our Song of the Week. The last original member of the Spinners has left the stage. Henry Fambro was a baritone in the legendary R&B group, which started in Detroit in 1954. With limited commercial success when they started, they eventually signed with Atlantic Records in the 1970s and had a string of hits including I'll Be Around, Could It Be I'm Falling in Love, One of a Kind Love Affair, and The Rubber Band Man. Fambro was on hand last year when the Spinners were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Spinner's Instagram account says Henry Fambro died peacefully at his home in Virginia. He was 85 years old. And now here's one of my favorite songs by the Spinners, and I hope it's yours too. Could It Be I'm Falling in Love? The Spinners with my Song of the Week. Thank you. That's The Spinners with Could It Be I'm Falling in Love, my song of the week. I'm Freddie Bell. Be sure to download the Freddie Bell Radio Show's app and let's get together and talk about the music. Thank you for joining me this weekend on New Beginnings, and a reminder that we're here every weekend at this time, and we invite you to listen with a friend. On the lighter side of my desk this morning, a Mississippi woman is considering filing a lawsuit after she allegedly discovered a rodent's tooth inside a Snickers candy bar. Peyton Davis claims she purchased a candy bar back in November from a Family Dollar store. After biting into it, Davis says she felt something hard and spit it out. She then took the object to a dentist who said it was probably a rodent's tooth. Davis has hired an attorney to possibly file a lawsuit. Yuck. The Windy City might be changing its name to Bedbug City. Chicago tops Oregon's annual bedbug list for the fourth year in a row. The top six U.S. cities remain the same as last year's. New York City ranked second, followed by Philadelphia in third, Cleveland fourth, Los Angeles fifth, and Detroit sixth. The rankings are based on the number of residential and commercial treatments Oregon performs between December 1st, 2022 and November 30th, 2023. From the lighter side of my desk this week, and I'm Freddie Bell. Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
And they brought the boy to Jesus. And when the Spirit saw him, immediately threw the boy into convulsions. And he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the Father, "How long has this been happening to him?" The Father said, "From childhood. It has often cast him into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you are able to do anything, help us. Have compassion on us." Jesus said, almost indignantly, "If you are able, all things can be done for one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I do believe, I do believe. Help my unbelief." The story goes on, and the child was restored. But in that climactic line of the father crying out, "I do believe, help my unbelief," it resounded in my soul how easy it is to say in basic teachings like Unity and others, "I am a child of God." Or more dramatically, as Shirley MacLaine liked to put it, "I am God. I am God in expression. I am divine life showing up as me," as our minister Eric Butterworth would put it to his listeners in New York. Abstractions. They can be like those light bulbs that go off and open us to a new idea, but sometimes they don't go any further. And like that man in the gospel, oh, he believed the abstract idea. We're all children of God. Help my unbelief. Help the corners of my mind that don't believe, that don't hold to that truth. Help those days when I'm just not sure. Help my unbelief. So in today is what will have to be a mini lesson. We take this idea, the central truth of our existence. I exist. I am. We connect it with qualities. In this room are former members of this church. You would have known them because you were singing to them. Took the concept of the 12 powers of the 12 divine gifts that God places like a seed, like a potential within us. But, as Mr. Fillmore said, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? God gives you capacity for faith, the power to perceive the truth of an idea before there's any evidence. Wisdom that can see the divine activity of spirit, principles of truth at work in your life and your world. Divine order, how the creative process unfolds. Jesus so often spoke of the power of the mustard seed, the power of the seed, and then the corn, and then the full ear of corn. Nature has an orderly progression, and it behooves us to follow it, to work with it. We're in a world awakening to the idea that humanity can be much better stewards and benefit from working with nature rather than extorting from her certain qualities. So this idea, I am, I exist, is it just an abstraction to you? Something that Unity preaches over and over ad nauseum? Or does it mean something? When you find a challenge, a dark corner of your mind living in doubt and fear, when your place in this world seems challenged by illness, really rough relationships, do you remember the tool of your very existence? Your I am nature that you can attach to godlike powers and make a difference. Our silent unity affirmation in our prayer time. The beginning of healing is the realization of this thought, I am whole. Now remember the story I've told you several times from Myrtle Fillmore. She had a woman write to her and she said, I've used the Unity affirmations over and over. I've said day after day, I don't have the flu, I don't have the flu, I don't have the flu, I don't have the flu. And it's not working. And Myrtle wrote back to her and said, my dear, in her comforting motherly tones, Unity does not ask you to deny your experience. We ask you to deny that that is the eternal truth of who you are. Your illness is something that you pass through, even if it is an illness unto death. You pass through it. Your spirit, your essential core goes on. So like that man that cried out, help my unbelief. Look at challenges in your life and affirm, I am, I exist. Therefore, I have God-given potential that may not take me over this problem or obstacle in an instant, but it's a beginning. It's a step forward. It's a tool to help me move in the direction of my wholeness. Or those words I love from Henry David Thoreau, to move confidently in the direction of your dreams and to live the life you have imagined. You won't get there, as those folks said to Mr. Fillmore in Kansas City 100 years ago, what am I going to do?
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org. Today is National Fettuccine Alfredo Day. It celebrates one of the world's favorite ways to enjoy a plate of fettuccine. This dish enjoys a history as rich as its flavor. Created in 1908, fettuccine was made out of love and concern by an Italian restaurateur. Alfredo de Lelio's concern for his pregnant wife's lack of appetite caused him to put his talents to work. The birth of their first son depended upon it. His recipe of noodles, cheese, and butter not only encouraged her to eat, but also inspired him to put it on the menu, too. Since then, this century-old dish has been satisfying pasta lovers around the world ever since. Celebrate with a big dish of fettuccine Alfredo and invite friends and families to join you, too. As you know, it's not a celebration if you don't. That's our show, and thanks to our special guests for stopping by and sharing information that we hope can change lives. If you missed any of today's show, you can subscribe to our podcast or just Google Freddie Bell or stop by my website of the same name. Thanks for listening, and remember that each day is a chance for a new beginning. See you next week.